Tuesday, June 23rd, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we're in the book of John. We're in chapter 11, looking at verses 1 through 44, with a message titled, Jesus Defeats the Last Enemy.
That's what most people think life should be. We just need to be kept from dying. If we could solve that, we'd solve everything. That's what people live for. This is the pursuit of life. It is to be kept from dying. You know this. We all do this. Most of our worries in life center on right here. To be kept from death.
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
I invite you to turn this morning to John chapter 11. John chapter 11. And looking at the resurrection through one of the events that happened, the well-known event of Lazarus. As you know, we're working through Matthew in the morning. If you're a visitor, we're working through that book. And we'll be coming back and concluding our study in the next few weeks on the passion and death of Christ. And then looking at Matthew's account of the resurrection. But I thought this would be a different look today from John chapter 11. So let's give our attention to the word of the Lord, found on page 1066, beginning at verse 1. Now, a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, of the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you're going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him. After saying these things, he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover. Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died, and for your sake I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him. So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off. And many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she arose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled, and he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he's been dead for 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you'd see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." And there will end the reading of God's word. Well, today we celebrate the resurrection of Christ, really a truth that we celebrate every day as Christians in the Christian life. It is, beloved, a doctrine of our hope. It is the doctrine of real hope in a world of hopelessness. Paul said, "If Christ is not raised from the dead, we are still in our sins." So there is no good news apart from this great truth that we confess together, that Christ is risen from the dead. And as I said earlier, our very justification before God is rooted in the resurrection of Christ. We are declared righteous based on the truth that he is risen and that he has conquered sin and death. The challenge, of course, today is not just to intellectually assent to this doctrine. It's not just to agree with it. That's not what we're after in Christianity. And maybe like me, you might have struggled in the course of life to appreciate the resurrection like you should and to understand its implications for life. And that's what I really want to strike on this morning, and have you think about this morning, why it's so important for the present, this truth of what we confess, that Christ is risen from the dead. We just don't seem to get very ahead in life, if you know what that means. It only seems that as time goes on, life gets harder, and we're all sort of fighting to just make a better life of things, because it's just so difficult. And if you have witnessed in these past months with us as a congregation, and you know the death that has come upon us, one of the reasons I chose this morning, the death that has come and how quickly death came and shocking ways that death came, you know it's a grief. You know it's a grief. For those of you still, maybe years later, who've lost loved ones in surprising ways, you know that this is a grief that just doesn't go away. It's a pain that doesn't go away. Well, this morning I want to consider with you one of the most familiar passages on the resurrection itself, because embedded here is the story in the story. That's what's so amazing about this text. This passage you've heard preached all your life and something you're very familiar with is showing us the answer to all of our sorrow in this life, to all of the pain in this life that sin and death has brought upon us. And it gives us the answer through the resurrection of the body, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Let me say, for all of you who know the pain and suffering of loss and the pain of what the Bible characterizes as the last enemy. Have you thought about that language? We have a lot of enemies in this life. The last enemy is death. the burden of sin. In this story, you have a reviving of all hope. But you have to go down before you get up. It's a hard path to walk before you see light. That's why this is important to go through. I'm going to take you down, and then we're going to rise to the highest heights by the end of this. The heart of the issue, as I see it, is captured in verse 37, where the people ask a question. Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Now think about that question. It's a really important question to this text. That's what most people think life should be. We just need to be kept from dying. If we could solve that, we'd solve everything. And that's how people live. That's what people live for. This is the pursuit of life. It is to be kept from dying. You know this. We all do this. Most of our worries in life center on right here. To be kept from death. And I would say that this is probably their greatest frustration, people in life with God. Why, if God is so good, doesn't he just prevent this from happening? Doesn't he just prevent this from happening? So I think that's a crucial question. And I would answer immediately and say, that is a grossly ignorant understanding of what is needed. We don't need to be just kept from dying as the common solution to life. And this is where it's important to say what you know and what is absolutely true, that death is a result of a curse upon us because of sin. The real question is, can this man overcome death and revive us again and give us life? That should have been the question. That should have been the question. How can that be achieved? And what would be the consequence of that if he could do that? If he could overcome death itself and give us life again so that we never die? In the first few chapters of John 11, you have distraught sisters, Mary and Martha, because their brother Lazarus is sick. You know the family bonds. You know how close family is. You know the pain of this. These are your people. These are those whom you love. So they come to Jesus in verse 3 and say to him, Lord, behold, the one whom you love is sick. Well, there's the marvel. They know it. They will say it later when Jesus weeps. See how he loved him. We're always living with this, though. We are always living with this. You have no idea what's going on in your body right now. You have no idea what's going on in your body. And you could take every herb under the sun to try to stop it. You have no way to stop it. Trader Joe's or Sprouts won't solve it. Even Christopher Hitchens once said that one day you'll be tapped on the shoulder and told the party is going on and you have to leave. The basic functions of life already begin deteriorating at birth. This is science, and I'm not a scientist. We begin to die when we're born, but it doesn't really touch us until this kind of thing happens. You are very sick. You have cancer. You're going to die. Martha and Mary have spent their time with Jesus. They have listened to him. They've listened to him speak. So knowing that this thing has happened, they come to him, Lord, here's the one you love. Here's the one you love. This one is yours, but he's sick. When you all face something like this, you tend to want to call somebody. So you call your pastors and you have hope. You have hope. Maybe God will prevent this thing from happening. The pastor will come over. And maybe just like the question here that comes out, maybe secretly you begin to think, could this not be prevented? Could he not prevent death? And you think that's the solution? And I say again, you've misunderstood death. Here's the hard truth. Death is judgment. I'm not sure we understand that today. We often say God is love. God doesn't do any judging. Death is judgment. Death is judgment. Every death is judgment because of sin. But here's something entirely different happens. When Jesus hears this, he says, I know what you're thinking. Death is judgment. What about our deaths? He begins to work on that. This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. And that doesn't immediately help. What a confusing statement. This sickness won't lead to death, but God will be glorified through what's happening here. Now, if I heard that and you heard that, you would think Jesus is going to heal him. But again, is this just about preventing death? The promise he makes is whatever is happening, here's the promise, God will be glorified through it. Now, as it has been said, there is not a maverick molecule in our bodies doing whatever it wants to do apart from the will of God. He is in direct control of every molecule. So what happens? Okay, think of that statement. It's not unto death, but God will be glorified through it. So what happens? When he hears that he's sick, he stays behind 2 more days. Everything about Jesus is confusing at this point. Everything he says, it's cryptic. He won't even say he's dead. He'll finally say it, but it's all cryptic. He purposely stays away. He didn't come to do the visit. If you looked at that, you'd say that's terrible pastoral care. And so what happens? Lazarus dies. It has to touch every sort of pain and frustration that we all have and that we feel in this life when you don't understand the ways of the Lord. Isn't this just all culminate right here? You don't understand his ways and you're confused about his ways. And it's not just that, but it's what's said in his word that doesn't seem to correspond with reality, right? That's the hard part. Jesus was walking along in John already, John 8, saying things like this. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. What do you do with that? People are dying all around us. And people who are believers. Nothing feels victorious about life. And yet I'm told to be of good cheer because he's overcome the world. I have sat at more deathbeds and read the promises of God in victory, and it seems like none of it's experienced. And this is the heart of it. Put yourself in their shoes for a minute. Here's your frustration. You just said this would not be unto death, but it was. There's the dilemma of the text. Can you feel the wave of emotion and frustration that even though he could have done something and come and stopped this and prevented death, he didn't? But instead, he leaves Lazarus alone to die in the land of Judea while he remains beyond the Jordan? What is this? This is not the simple, easy text you think it is. This is why people go after us in Christianity. This is why they say you're weak people who just need a crutch. Running around and believing in Jesus. And yet telling everyone about Jesus. And celebrating this resurrection thing. You know how many people from the community said to me last week, isn't that your Super Bowl? Super Bowl? This is a crisis. Now, the disciples are processing this too. They're trying to figure this thing out. They're trying to figure out Jesus too. And as we read this, they come up and say, listen, Rabbi, we don't want to go over there anyways. The Jews are just waiting to stone you there. Let's just move on. It got away. So this is a bad situation, right? I mean, the disciples are now fretting that his life now will be snatched away in death too. So really you have presented here a view that things have run amok from the sovereignty of God, that nothing is certain in this life, that everything could be lost, that just like Lazarus' life was lost, Jesus' life might be lost. So the disciples are scared to death that Jesus is going to lose his own life by these killers, just like Lazarus' life was snuffed away by the enemy of death. And so Jesus answers. Are there not 12 hours in the day? Anyone walks in the day, he doesn't stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. You know what he's saying? If you're walking in darkness, sure, something bad might happen. But we're not walking in darkness. We are walking in the will of God. Nothing happens by chance. And nothing can touch us apart from the will of God. Thomas says, fine, well, we'll just go die then. What an optimist, huh? Well, Jesus now makes his way to the death scene. And he finds all these people have gathered around who are mourning. Lazarus has been placed in the tomb now for 4 days. Seems like the whole thing's a mistake. He comes in and he comes into a funeral home type setting.
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Be sure to tune in next time for part 2 of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.